You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Remember, if you gamble, use your game sense, stay within your limits. Go to GameSense.AB.ca. How you doing?
I'm good. You had me at drink tickets included for the golf on Friday.
How's your golf game?
My golf game is coming. We just started playing 2 weeks ago, and it's coming. It's not pretty. I wouldn't recommend watching me swing a club, but we do manage to get the face of the club onto the back of the ball often enough to get her around okay.
Yeah, well, that's great. We're to the Stanley Cup Final now, Kev, and it's a matchup of the goalies who, by all the numbers, have been the two best goalies in the playoffs, in Hart and Anderson. And I know Dobish has played very well too. But Anderson and Hart, you know what? Now, maybe you got some other numbers that would suggest someone's been better, but those two being pretty damn good, I would say. So let's go first on Vegas. Where and how should they attack Freddie Anderson?
Well, this is going to be interesting because, and I brought this up before and it continues. I don't know that people are aware, like this might surprise some people. The Vegas Golden Knights lead the Stanley Cup playoffs heading into the Cup Final in expected goals for off of high danger chances at even strength. They are generating quality, but they're not necessarily doing it with skill plays.
Okay.
When we think of breakaways and slot line passes and you know, the pretty stuff, they're mid-tier. Where they're dominating is in the grid. You combine rebounds, deflections, screens, and broken play goals, and they are number one with a bullet, and it's propelled them to first overall when it comes to creating dangerous chances. Now, the interesting thing, and this actually flips the other way too, but the interesting thing is Freddie's excelled at that. Like this, that's an area I don't think he's seen it to this degree, like Vegas is going to bring, but he's got the experience. He's pretty good at finding his lanes. He's big enough to look over. He doesn't get going back and forth behind screens and losing the puck and over moving. He plays a conservative positional game. He's in his crease most of the time. He's a big body, shifts into pucks a lot. So it's a real strength versus strength. The way that Vegas, and again, I think a lot of people think of Marner leading the playoffs and scoring, and you know, they think of the skill element and obviously what Jack Eichel brings and Shea Theodore on the back end. But where they're really making hay is with the ugly goals, the gritty stuff. And it'll be interesting to see how Carolina's defense handles it. I think Freddie Anderson's well equipped to handle it behind them. And that's one that I'll be watching closely, because that's something they've dominated in, but it also happens to be an area that Anderson has been really good at.
Okay. So you're talking like high danger chances, most of them are through grit, like screens, rebounds, deflections.
Yeah.
So if you're Carolina and your goalie's really good at that, like obviously you always try to limit the traffic, but Carolina's only allowed 15 goals in their 12 wins, Kev. Like, it's ridiculous, crazy, right? Like, it's almost be at one goal against per game is mind-blowing to me in the playoffs. So what have you seen defensively from Carolina? Like, do they give up a lot of those and Freddie Anderson's just good at it, or they don't give up a ton of screens, or they're not giving up a lot of second chances?
They've done a really good job sort of on second chances, managing the net front. And again, I suggest that's about to get more difficult. Although against Philly, that's how Philly tried to generate offense too, right? They weren't a pretty team in terms of how they tried to score, and Carolina handled it really well. You know, the Canes are still giving up chances. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that 5-on-5, they're the second best team in the playoffs. Philly was actually better in terms of high danger chances 5-on-5 against. So it's not like it was in the playoffs in terms of the breakaways and all the things. Freddie Anderson saw the third most breakaways of any goalie in the NHL during the regular season, and think about how little he played to be third most. Like, they give up a ton off the rush. They've tightened that up somewhat, but I would suggest if you're Vegas, and it's interesting because I don't know that they're a team that dives deep into these pre-scouts. Like, they just, let's create our offense and let our guys do what they do. But if you're going to get breakaways against Carolina, and they do give them up, you need to try and work Freddie wide, like sort of deke and fake and go wide. And I don't think Ottawa got the memo in the first round. They tried to beat him by scoring, or his pads, and we'll get this into this in a second, but his pads are shorter than a lot of his peers. Like, he wears short pads, and it makes it really tempting to go after the five hole. But when I broke down all the breakaway goals against him in the regular season, there were 21, and 13 were in off dekes, and only two of those were back between the legs five hole. You really need to try and stretch him out wide. And teams that have, their Montreal had four breakaway goals, two were on dekes, and two were on just perfect shots. But the teams that have had success are stretching him out wide with the dekes. Ottawa tried to go five hole a bunch of times and took a bunch of shots. Philly either deked five hole or took clean shots, and he stopped all of them. So Montreal was the first team to sort of get to him on breakaways, on one-on-one chances, and it started with two dekes that sort of get him out and stretch him out wide, as opposed to trying to sift it back in between. A five-hole that's tempting, but for the most part, he does a good job closing. He wears his pads, Jason, shorter than a lot of his peers. I remember being in the locker room in Toronto way back when, and I could see that he'd actually had them altered. Like, he had his Bauer pads come in fixed sizes, and he actually sent it away and had a top inch cut off and re-sewn back together. And he was showing me in the locker room, like, dropping into butterflies and showing me how, hey, like, it closes perfectly. I don't need more than this, and I feel more mobile.
Okay.
And so I don't know how far below he is his max height. That's all, you know, they calculate that based on the length of your I think it's your ankle to your knee and then your knee to your thigh divided by 55% of that. I don't know how far below he is, but he's definitely got shorter pads, and it makes it tempting to look five hole. And yeah, you can catch him with quick shots there. But when the dekes come, he does a pretty good job of sealing it despite the temptation to try and go there.
Awesome. Now, if you're Carolina, how are you attacking Carter Hart?
Off the right wing, I'm trying to make him move to his right as much as I can. So I'm coming down right wing and trying to filter pucks that make him move left to right. Every goalie has a strong side, and every goalie has a relative, like relative to that, a weak side. Like, if you got a side you move better to, there's another way to move to. And for Carter, it really seems to be left to right. His ability to get rotation, even on downhill backdoor one timers, when he's moving to his glove, he's made some incredible saves that I don't think people realize how good they were. Because he's just beating those plays. He's got rotation. He's getting to his post, and he's beating it so set and square and tall over his knees that he's making it look easy. It's a different story if you go back the other way. I thought it was interesting. Colorado scored four on the blocker side, three high, one over the pad, and none under the arm. But in the playoffs so far, he's given up six under the arm on the blocker side. So between the blocker and the body, sort of just off the hip. And almost all of them, four against Anaheim, all of them are on shots coming down right wing. So going back the other way.
Okay.
And for a lot of goalies, there's that tendency, because we've got the stick in our blocker, it sort of preoccupies that hand a little bit. And there's a tendency on low stick shots to turn, sort of almost like you're rotating, sort of twisting that stick like you're going to steer a puck into the glass.
Okay.
And it can start to bleed into your other movements in terms of the elbow comes up a little bit and that gap can be there. So, you know, Colorado fired twice as many shots at his blocker than they did his glove. Mm-hmm. And they only played him four times. Like, that's a noticeable discrepancy that tells me they were looking for something as well. But when I broke down the shots, most of them were coming from the left side. So he's square and set on them. I think attacking him, if you can generate off right wing or make him move left to right, it's not so much a weakness. It's just relative compared to making him move the other way. And usually that's on a power play. Like, that's where you get those opportunities to make those decisions in terms of what side are we going to attack at it. Now, can you make it fit to your strengths, or do you want to go to your, if your strengths are the other side, you just keep working that way. And that's the decision Carolina has to make. One of the other things too, is if you get odd man rushes, Vegas hasn't given up many, but if you do, they did in first round against Utah, rather than trying to sort of beat him to a post with passes down low, you're way better to make that pass high in the zone, one-timer top half of the net. Even on the glove side, there's a tendency to and I think he got this in Philly and it's still in his game, do what we call a spread. So just push, get the pad down, stick the arm out over top. You've got the bottom half covered, but virtually no access to the top half. And because he takes a little ice and is aggressive outside of his crease, if you make that pass higher in the zone, Jason, he's got more distance to travel and he's more likely to go into that spread. So those would be, you know, you get in those situations. Do we have a book? Those would be the books when you get those opportunities. Last one for him, pop passes, low, high in the zone. And then against the grain, far side off the pop passes, some tendencies to reach with the stick and be late to the far side. Some tendencies to push rather than rotate into angle as he pushes up to the middle that creates a delay to the far side. And then last is off against the grain on pretty much everything. Like if you're moving one direction, shoot back the other way. I don't have a lot of great breakdowns on exactly why, but at the end of the day, 35% of the goals were against the grain on him this year. It is a small sample, but that's more than twice the tracked average, and it stood out.
Any idea why that is?
You know, he builds so, like, his movement is so good on his skates, and his rotation is so good, and he holds edges so well. I think sometimes you can actually, as you move and rotate, maybe get a little almost over square as you're moving towards that side. You can get a little too much rotation, and it just limits your backdoor access a little bit. And, you know, again, I don't have anything definitive on the exact circumstances that led to it, but when I look back at the numbers that I tracked manually, that one stood out. It's the highest total we've had, not just in the playoffs so far, but of any of the 17 goalies that I tracked for the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. So, Kevin, now, hey, guys have great years. You know, Dobish was unbelievable in the playoffs.
Yep.
And they've got Fowler, right? There's Montembeau. I don't think they'll keep all three of them for next year. They could. So you look at Dobish, and maybe more so Montembeau, and kind of what happened. Like, this was a guy who was the third-string goalie at the Four Nations a year ago, and now he was the third-string goalie in Montreal and couldn't even play. What do you think happened with Montembeau, and is that a reclamation project that you'd be willing to take on if you were a team?
It depends where I am as a team.
Okay.
Right? He's got NHL experience.
Yeah.
There are elements of his game that I like. When I watched him this season, I just thought he was behind on everything, and it looked like he was trying to find the right phrase here. He wasn't just playing. It looked like he was trying to play. He was trying to technique the game rather than play the game.
Okay.
If that makes sense. Yeah. Like, it just a preoccupation with movement. And it looked almost like he was thinking out there. To, you know, like just he was late on everything. He was late to spots. He was behind on plays. And his technical game should be one where that shouldn't be the case. Like, he plays conservatively. He's not super deep. He looked to me like a guy who just lost confidence. Now, I don't know what was going on behind the scenes there. They made some changes with the goalie coach, obviously, in late January. We've talked about that. Mm-hmm. And the goalie coach that they let go was somebody that, you know, he had worked with since junior, Montembeau, that is. And I believe probably played a strong role in bringing him in. They obviously had a good relationship. So, but he's also a guy that, you know, can be hard on guys is what I've heard. So there's enough pedigree there that if I was a team looking to rebuild an asset and maybe get an asset to take him, absolutely. Absolutely. I would want to look at more film than I've looked at and sort of figure out why he always looked like he was behind or off angle or not set or not square. Like, why is that? Because from a conservative depth standpoint, he should have been able to beat plays constantly. That should have been the strength of his game. But he didn't seem to. So if you look at that tape and you're like, hey, I think we can fix this. We just need to build this up. To your point, he was on the Four Nations team. He had a good year last year. You know, there's been questions around him about conditioning earlier points in his career. I don't know if that was an issue. He had that success on Team Canada, and all of a sudden there's McDonald's commercials, and there's, I believe, Hyundai. And, you know, I saw him on the television a lot as sort of a not playing hockey, but as the face of several brands. Sometimes, you know, in the Canadian market, you can stop working and think you've arrived. And in this position, I'm not saying that's the case. I'm right. Definitely, I don't know him well enough, and I haven't been around that team on a day-to-day basis. It doesn't match what I've heard about him and his work ethic, but, and how it's sort of evolved as he's matured, but it doesn't take much, man. Like, if you're not constantly evolving in this position, you are falling behind. And let's not forget too, the guys he lost the job to, again, I'd really want to take a look at the tape and like, if you're a team, you better do your homework on this one because the numbers aren't flattering. They fell off a cliff. We talked about Bennington, you know, the numbers, the adjusted numbers for this season, heading into the Olympics, Like Montembeau was twice as bad. Like his numbers, there is no redeeming in the advanced analytics. They're near the very bottom of the league. They fell off a cliff. But the guys that passed him, like Dobich looks like he might be a future star. And Jacob Fowler absolutely, I believe, is going to be a star in this league. It might take some more time, but like let's not lose sight of the fact that the two guys that passed him on the depth chart that had worked more recently with the coach who was promoted from the American Hockey League, both are guys that I've got like up near the top of the league on the season as a whole, despite some ups and downs for Dobish in terms of their performance. Like Jacob Fowler finished top 10 in adjusted save percentage in a small sample. So it's not like he lost the job to nobodies. These guys can all play.
Okay. So, because I'm just kind of interested to see how they'll tie. We know that, you know, Gallagher said he's probably done his last time in Montreal, so there might be a move there. Teams are always looking for goaltenders, and I wonder about Montembeau. And, you know, you mentioned that, you know, maybe he was overthinking it and he was trying to not just play because you still got to move, right? Like you can get, you know, paralysis by analysis at times, Kev, can be a problem.
Yeah, no, I mean, and you have to have visual leads. And when I just did a breakdown with Dustin Wolf, make this backdoor save. And it's like, you can see all the mechanics of the movement, the way he holds his edges, the power of his pushes. He arrives in a split with his body and his torso straight upright. And you're like, I'm marveling at all the physical stuff. And the first thing he tells you is, well, it's got to lead with the eyes, right? Like the whole key to that save is that I lead with my vision. I lead with my eyes. I get top down rotation and that allows my body to arrive. And I can see that this guy's one timing it. So I know what I have to do. Sometimes, though, we can get to a point where we lead with the eyes, but the body doesn't follow instantly, where instead of it's look and go, it's look then go. And that delay, as small as that sounds between look and go and look then go, can put you behind pretty quickly in a league that has never been more dynamic in terms of puck movement east-west around a crease.
Okay. Awesome stuff, man. We'll get into it next week. Maybe we're into June. And we might do our annual Kevin Woodley's goalies to watch for in the summer because you've hit on a few good ones in the past. So we might.
Well, I had a list for you. You warned me to do a little homework on the UFAs.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you a little tease, and we can break down this too maybe next week, and then get into some of our sleepers because I did the UFA list, and obviously the headliner is Bob, and you got your Peter Mrazek and Aaron Brossoit and Frederick Anderson, Stuart Skinner. From an adjusted save point standpoint, just that alone, just adjusted save percentage last year, amongst the unrestricted free agents this year, guess who was number one?
And it's not Freddie Anderson?
It's not Freddie Anderson. Yeah, he had a bit of a tough regular season in a really tough environment.
Okay. Connor Ingram?
It ain't Bob in 82nd.
Connor Ingram?
It is Connor Ingram. Ooh. So there's food for thought for Edmonton Oilers fans. Well done, Jason. Okay. Yeah. Now, obviously, I don't have numbers on some of the guys that were in the American League, and we can talk about that. But amongst the guys that played in the NHL last season, number one in adjusted save percentage was Connor Ingram. Number two was your guy, Daniel Tarasov, who had a great start and was near the top of the league, but fizzled down the stretch. And so we can talk about that next week and go into how much of that fizzle was everything going on around him, how much of it was the workload catching up to him. Is there a goalie there that teams might want to target? Stay tuned.
All right. Good stuff, buddy. Okay, man, we appreciate it as always. Kev, have yourself a great day. We will chat with you next Monday. You know what? It feels like we're in Vancouver. It's very rainy for the last few days here. So
Well, I don't want to tell you that it's 25 degrees sunny and I golfed with my wife last night.
Oh, there you go. All right.
Till 9:30 at night.